Good morning, honorable members, Deputy Minister of Sports and Recreation, the delegation from the department. I'm going to request that today we are having two presentations. The first one, we are going to start with the briefing by Department of Sports and Recreation on the annual report 2010-2011. And after that, we are going to have deliberations and the finalization of higher education laws amendment bill. Honorable members and our delegation from the department, I went through the briefing, it's very long, and like I'm saying that we are having actually two items for the day. I'm going to be very strict on time. For this briefing by the Department of Sports and Recreation, we are going to start now and make sure that by 12:15 we are done. So I'm going to request that the briefing, it should start now and we finish at 11 so that we've got 1 hour and 15 minutes to interact with the briefing so that we allow for education so that we can proceed with the second item of the day. And I'm just going to request that we introduce ourselves, do it very quick. Deputy Minister, you are welcome. And, you know, I must maybe on behalf of the members of the select committee just indicate that we don't know what is happening. We were never fortunate to have a minister, you know, during our briefing. But we are happy that you are always available. The previous minister has never blessed or came before the select committee. And one was expecting that the new minister will appear before the select committee. But I want this to be noted as a serious concern for the select committee. I'll start by myself. I'm Wendy McCarthy, the chairperson of the select committee. I'm from the Northwest Province.
Samanani Kamala Mutinki Mode from Gauteng Province.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. My name is Lydia Mshodi. I'm coming from the Free State Province. Thanks.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Michael De Villiers, and I'm from the Western Cape.
Good morning. My name is Willem Faber, and I represent the Northern Cape on this committee.
Good morning. My name is Sipho Plaiki. I'm from the Northwest Province.
Good morning. My name is Retief Leroux. I'm Head of Corporate Services at the moment.
Good morning. I am Noma Kotelo, Senior Manager, Sports Support Services.
Good morning. I'm Duhini Naidu, School Sport Unit, SRSA.
Good morning. Paul Singh, Chief Director, Sports Support.
Good morning. Bernard Desmond-Spoy.
Good morning. Bernard Desmond-Spoy, strategic and executive support.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. I'm Sumayya Khan, Acting Director General.
Honourable Chair, I trust you all know who I am.
Yeah, let's just go straight to the briefing.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. May I just, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, whilst we say thank you so much for the opportunity to engage with the NCP Select Committee, just put on record the reason for the temporary absence of the Minister is that Cabinet is in session this morning. And normally if you have to do something in Cabinet, you have to attend. I want to place on record that I'm aware that the Minister did prepare a input. In fact, I saw it yesterday when we had a study group meeting, and I know the Minister is trying to wiggle his way out of Cabinet to join us here. So I just want to flag that in case the Minister does come, that we just create the opportunity for him, if he's successful, to be excused from Cabinet. But over and above that, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, taking into account the Chairperson's directive that we should be not long-winded to the point and be mindful of the time, let me now not to take time with the Department, let them speak to the annual report. Safe to say one thing, Honourable Chair, we are absolutely delighted with the audit, the outcomes of our Department. It shows that leadership that we provided and a lot of effort from senior management did turn around the process, and we are really, really, really ecstatic about that. But without mincing words and taking some of your time, let me rather ask the Department to walk us through the presentation to the Honourable Committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Madam Chair, as you can see, we have made available the presentation to the committee. It is a very long presentation, and we've also, I would believe that members also have copies of our annual report, which was tabled in Parliament. So, and they've had an opportunity to go through it. And obviously, for clarity, they would be prepared then to ask us any questions around that. But Madam Chair, I will very quickly give an overview and a summary of the annual report, and then we have our senior managers who will also highlight key issues in their presentations. We may not be able to go through it slide by slide, but we will highlight the important things. I will give them an opportunity to do that as well. Madam Chair, the key strategic focus for areas for sport and recreation in South Africa was to increase the number of performances in sport and increase the number of people participating and also the performances at an international level. SRSA continues to make a contribution to the strategic outcomes of the government's programs of action, such as inclusive citizenship, physical well-being, skills development, and economic growth. And the main responsibilities of sport and recreation is to develop national policies and guidelines for sports and recreation in the country. The provinces are the implementers, are the key implementers, as well as municipalities, and we have the South African Sports Confederation and Olympic Committee and our national federations who are also responsible for this. Madam Chair, it's important to note that during the period under review, Sport and Recreation South Africa served under the political leadership of the Reverend Dr. M. S. Tofile from the 1st of April 2010 to the 31st of October 2010. And Mr. F.M. Balula was appointed as Minister of Sport and Recreation South Africa on the 1st of November 2011. Also, Madam Chair, the position of Director General became vacant with effect from the 27th of February because of the untimely death of our DG, Mr. B.P. Peterson. The department has an establishment consisting of 220 posts, all of which are funded, and 188 posts are filled. We also have 26 interns that we employ, and we have two secondments from GIZ, which is an implementing agency for the donor funding that South Africa receives from the German government. We have drafted a functional structure in 2010-11, but this structure will be reviewed again in this financial year following new strategic initiatives that come out of the South Africa Sport and Recreation South Africa Roadmap and the finalization of our National Sport and Recreation Plan. We also continue to play an active role in the Supreme Council for Sport in Africa and the establishment of a new structure of sport within the African Union. Sport and Recreation focuses highly on outcomes 12 of the government's 12 outcomes, and that speaks to an efficient, effective, development-oriented public service aimed at empowered, free, and inclusive citizenship. Our negotiations continue with the Department of Basic Education, and good progress was made in finalizing a draft integrated school sport framework. Madam Chair, this is now at the end of the financial year 2010-11. Further to that, much progress has been made in this financial year as well. In terms of governance, we do have regular management audit committee, audit steering committee, risk and budget committee meetings. We've reviewed our internal audit charter, our audit committee charters, our risk management committee charters. We have a risk register. A risk register was in place, and our three-year internal audit strategic plan and annual internal audit operational plan was completed and approved. And as the Deputy Minister has indicated, in 2010-11, the department received an unqualified report. Our final draft white paper was presented and approved at the Minister's Strategic Workshop in January. A monitoring and evaluation framework, including the monitoring and evaluation plan, was developed and approved by the Minister. And we've also tabled our strategic plan 2011-2015 to Parliament. In terms of our service delivery improvement plan, these were developed, approved by the Minister and tabled with the Department of Public Service and Administration. As per compliance, our quarterly departmental reports were also complied. Madam Chair, Sport and Recreation South Africa also worked on various pieces of legislation during the period under review. The National Sport and Recreation Amendment Bill and the Combat Sport Bill and the SA Boxing Amendment Bill were some of the pieces of legislation we worked on. The Sport and Recreation Amendment Bill has been put on hold pending our discussions that will come out of our Sport and Recreation in Indaba that's going to be held now in November. So we believe that given the consultation that's taken place, there will be need for us to make further input into that bill. The Combat Sports Bill has already been sent to the Cabinet. The SA Boxing Amendment Bill has also been put on hold because we're waiting for the Combat Sports Bill to be promulgated. Once that has been promulgated, then we will start the process of repealing the SA Boxing Act. Arising from one of the pieces of legislation, there were regulations, bidding and hosting of the International Sport and Recreation Events Regulations, Special Measures Regulations, Recognition of Sport and Recreation Bodies Regulations, Funding of Sport and Recreation Bodies Regulations, our Fitness Regulations, and Safety of Sport and Recreation Events Regulations. So all of those were finalized in the last financial year. The program highlights, Madam Chair, for Sport and Recreation. The 2010 FIFA World Cup was hosted successfully in South Africa. Sport and Recreation had to work on the 17 guarantees, and we had to manage these guarantees. These were successfully managed, and a closeout report on this was tabled in Parliament. KENAFO Africa was a project which was successfully launched in June during the World Cup. SRGC had our annual conference with all of our stakeholders and our sports federations in September. We hosted the Golden Games and the Indigenous Games. A stakeholder consultation forum with key role players took place in November. The Sports Heroes Walk against HIV and AIDS took place in November, from November 16th to December 1st. And this targeted 30,000 people across all communities in Gauteng. Particularly because the event took place in Gauteng. we also, South Africa also participated in the Zone 6 Games. And the minister held a strategic workshop in January 2011. Madam Chair, sport and recreation in South Africa also played a leading role that contributed to the successful hosting of various major sporting events in South Africa. We also assisted SASCOC and the International Olympic Committee in the successful hosting of the 7th World Forum on Sport, Education and Culture in Durban, which took place in December. And we've also offered ongoing assistance in preparation for the International Olympic Committee session, 123rd IOC session that took place in July this year, the first time ever in Africa. Under the leadership of our DGs, the HEDCOM meetings and the Sports Forum meeting with CEOs of identified federations also took place. As part of 2010 World Cup, the department also initiated legacy programs, including club development, My Schools World Cup, Magnificent Fridays, outreach projects, capacity building, and we also did an audit, a social legacy audit of the 2010 Football World Cup. The Magnificent Friday project was launched in support of three federations that were hosting major championships, netball, cricket and rugby, and the support and the number of people that attended was quite phenomenal here. Madam Chair, we also had, in terms of our sports support services, scientific support to our talented athletes, about 366 athletes came out of that program. The support to the athletes was also complemented by basic sports science education, education for coaches, training camps, medical and scientific interventions, and a residential program for development athletes. A total of 60 athletes also participated in the Under-17 Kusasa Athletics Championships in Botswana. South Africa won 38 of the 71 medals at this event. And South Africans were also honored as the best male and female athletes in both track and field events. Madam Chair, there are two entities that report to Sport and Recreation South Africa. And one of them is Boxing South Africa, and the other is the South African Institute for Drug-Free Sport. We also received assistance from the German government through the German funding as well as the European Union funding. And the German bank KfW funded the construction of multi-purpose combination courts for youth development against violence through sports programs and technical assistance to Sport and Recreation South Africa and the 2010 FIFA World Cup program. Madam Chair, if I quickly may just focus on some of the challenges that we experience as a department. The human and financial resources to implement our strategic plan, and we believe that going forward now, we are in the process of finalizing the sports plan and the review, and the fact that we're going to review our structure, and we're hoping that these will now help to address these issues. And the other issue is within our budget, we have a conditional grant. The bulk of our funding is a conditional grant, and the grant goes out to the provinces. And it is our responsibility to ensure that we monitor that the funds that go out to the provinces are used for the purposes that it is. At the moment, we do have a system of monitoring it, but our capacity to monitor it as optimally is not sufficient. So whilst there is a system of monitoring in place, it's not sufficient and optimal. Management of performance information. Madam Chair, for the first time this year, the Auditor General expressed an opinion on performance information, meaning that they were looking at the targets that we set, whether we have achieved the targets, what the reasons were for not achieving targets, but importantly, they looked at the verification and validation of the information. For example, if we said we trained 50 people, They wanted actual proof that these 50 people were trained. Who were the people? Where did they come from? You know, where did the course take place? So they are those the actual verification of facts that audited in this financial year. Another challenge is the governance within the public entity and our sports federations. Madam Chair, I think all of us, we have spoke to the committee in the past, and we have indicated the challenges around Boxing South Africa, which is a public entity, and there are various challenges. Boxing South Africa and boxing as a code of sport previously attracted great sponsorships, and they could sustain themselves well. And the grant that the department had provided to them at the time was sufficient. But in recent years, there's been a lack of sponsorship. And the department has come on board to assist them with the turnaround strategy. The minister had co-opted the CFO, our CFO and our chief director to be part of ex-officio members of the board. The CEO of boxing, we made a big effort to make sure that that post was filled so that the CEO can bring in some stability to the organization. So those are the efforts from our side to address those challenges. Madam Chair, maybe this is not a challenge, but the fact that the building that we occupy at the moment has become inadequate for our needs. But the lease in the building ends now in October, and we started the process some time ago to acquire new office accommodation. We must hasten to add, Madam Chair, that we have followed all due process with the Department of Public Works in ensuring that we comply with the processes, the tender processes to acquire the buildings, the new office accommodation, and that is work in progress at the moment. Madam Chair, if I may just talk about the actual performance against the targets. I just speak about performance information. We had about 52 targets that we set ourselves at Sport and Recreation, and we achieved 46 of those 52 targets, and 10 of those targets were exceeded. The areas where we have not achieved some of those targets, we have provided some information in our annual report as to the reasons for not achieving that or for the deviation in our targets. Madam Chair, thank you very much. I'm going to ask the CFO to give us the report on the finances, and then if there are any other areas where our directors, our managers may want to add, we'll give them an opportunity as well to quickly go through their slides as well.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The performance under review, I just made the first slide that to show members the trend and the expenditure of our budget. If you look into the previous MTS period, the department received 4.9 billion and we spent 99.2% of that allocation. In 2009-2010, the allocation was 2.8 billion and 99.4% was spent. In 10 and 11, 1.2 was allocated and 99.7 of that was spent. The second slide, Chair, gives you the programs of the department and their allocation. The first program, as you can see there, is your administration, which is program one. The spending there was 99.6%. Program two, sports support services, they spend 100% of the allocation. Program three, mass participation, 99.9% of the allocation. International liaison, Chair, as you can see, that say the department has got a big deviation of 84%. The reasons will be explained in a later slide. Facilities, 100%, as well as the 2010 unit program spend allocation. The second slide, Chair, shows us the spending in terms of economic classification, where we can see where the funding is going. In terms of compensation to employees, 99.5 was spent. In goods and services, 97.2% was spent, and it makes 98.1% of the current expenditure. In terms of transfers and subsidies, members can see that all the transfers and subsidies, 100% was spent. And if you go further down, if you are capital expenditure, where also 99.2% was spent. If we go to the next slide, it just gives a breakdown of our transfer payments, which the first one is the 2010 Stadium Development Grant, and it was spent in total. Your host city operating grant, thereafter your mass participation grant, which is transferred to provinces. Your allocation to Boxing South Africa, as well as South African drug free sport. Your foreign government allocation, which also is a VAT for the FIFA tickets of 40 million. Your allocation to LabLife, as well as allocation to the National Federation. The next slide is an additional report which we compiled, which shows you how much was transferred to the provinces.
Your iPhone there.
Hold up, I was in my way. Chair, we apologize to the honorable members. It was oversight. All the phones will be switched off.
The next slide, as I indicated, is the allocation to the provinces, where you can see that Eastern Cape has spent 106% of the allocation, Free State 101%, Gauteng 92%, KwaZulu-Natal 104%, Limpopo 102%, Mpumalanga 100%, Northern Cape 88%, Northwest 69%, Western Cape 100%. If you go further down, use the allocation for the World Cup stadiums, where the city of Johannesburg, you can see it has spent 165%, city of Cape Town 201%, Etegwiri 327%, Nelson Mandela 293%, Mbombela 58%, Polokwane 325%. Manaung 265%, Rustenburg 62%, City of Tshwane. I think, Madam Chair, here on this slide, I must also explain that you might see that the spending is higher than the allocation is because the municipalities were using other sources of funding, not only the allocation that we transferred to them. So when you see more expenditure, it's not necessarily from the fiscal, but it's from money the whole cities have raised by themselves. The next slide, as I indicated in my first slide about the underspending in the international liaison and international commitment, the main reason is that some of the project plans for that year, like the Youth Olympic Games Hospitality, were not rolled out, as well as the Commonwealth Games Hospitality. That is the reason why the unit was sitting at 84% spending. Chair, the next slide. It's just a summary from the Auditor General's report where he issues an opinion that the financial statements present fairly in all material respects the financial position of Sports and Recreation South Africa as at the 31st of March 2011 and its financial performance and cash flow for the year ended in accordance with the Departmental Financial Reporting Report Framework prescribed by National Treasury, as well as the requirements of the PFMA and the TORA Act. However, Chair, I would like to make the committee aware that there are emphases of matter which the AG has raised. One of them is the unauthorized expenditure of 704,000, which was incurred in prior years, which, you know, is still standing as a balance in our financial statement. Secondly, the AG raises the issue of irregular expenditure of 3.3 million, which was incurred, of which 790 relates to the prior years and 2.5 relates to the current year. The irregular expenditure for the current year was mainly incurred due to non-compliance with supply chain management regulation, as well as non-compliance to the departmental delegation. Furthermore, the Auditor General notes fruitless expenditure of 7.2 million. This expenditure also relates to the prior years, and mainly members, they can be reminded that it includes amounts spent in the Beijing Olympics, in the Olympics hosted in Beijing. The next slide gives a detailed analysis of the irregular expenditure raised by the Auditor General. The first one is the ex-post approval of a procurement for a Kanisa project for an amount of 389,000. This case is still under investigation, but is the one which involves where officials did not follow the delegation of the department. The other expenditure identified is the level and traffic solution. Here, this refers to our cleaning services company, which upon appointment did produce a valid tax clearance certificate. However, during the time of the audit, when the Auditor General tested the validity of the tax clearance certificate, he found out their VAT matters were not in order. However, during our verification with the SARS, we found that they have rectified their tax matters. The next one is about human communication, Chair, where three quotations were not obtained for an amount of 176,000. This relates to an advert which was supposed to be placed on urgent basis for advertising posts, and permission was not approved by the accounting officer before placed on the newspaper. This matter is also receiving attention in terms of investigation. The next one is about a delegation of authority for an amount of 658,000. Here, an official who was appointed to act in a higher position was approving payment. What the AG requires is that on all the payments, the letter of acting should be attached. So subsequently, the letters have been attached to the payment approved by the delegated official. The last one is a non-compliance to the tax clearance certificate. Here also is that upon appointment, the department received the tax clearance certificate from the service providers. But however, during the Auditor General's review, he found that by the time he was checking with SARS, the suppliers' tax matters were not in order. The department has now come with a mechanism to say when a service provider is appointed, a proof of confirmation from SARS must also be attached. The next item, honorable members, refers to the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I want to emphasize that this is also, as you can see, the years. It involves previous years' transactions which are still in our books, which after investigation might be recovered or be cleared from the books. The first item refers to a double booking for a school sports competition where an amount of 2.1 million was spent and the accommodation was not utilized. An employee was charged, but the charges were later withdrawn on the lack of evidence. However, the investigation has been reopened again. The second one relates relates to a 56,000 where a workshop was organized and it was cancelled later because of non-availability of the members who were supposed to give the training in that workshop. This matter is still under investigation. The second matter also is in regards to a cancellation of a booked venue for an amount of 265,000. This matter is also under investigation. The next item refers to the Ekaya Center Beijing Olympics. Two employees in this case were transferred to the correctional services, and the department has transferred the matter to correctional services for further disciplinary action. The amount involved is 4.2 million. In the same year, in August 2009, here a supplier was paid for services not rendered. An employee was charged but was not found guilty. However, summons have been reissued to the service provider to recover the money. Furthermore, on emphasis of matter, the irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure are the standing agenda item on the MCC meetings, as well as the Audit Steering Committee and the Budget and Expenditure Review Committee meetings. The register for these items are reviewed on monthly basis and updated where necessary. However, members should take note that in the current financial year, no fruitless and unauthorized expenditure has been incurred. So we are still dealing with all matters on the report. The department is also undergoing investigating requests received from the presidential hotline, which one of them includes this amount that we have disclosed of 389 for the Kanisa Community Care Educare. Lastly, this is an analysis and trend of the audit queries that the department received from the Auditor General. In terms of the qualification, in 2008-09, the department received a qualified report. In 2009-10, the department received an unqualified report. And currently, also again, the department received an unqualified report. The issues reported by the Auditor General in 2008-09 was 104. In 2009-10, it went down to 71. In 10 and 11, it went down to 41. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to request that we are left with 20 minutes. So under all this program, when you do your presentation, take that into consideration.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can I just ask my Chief Director, is there anything else you want to add on? I have given an overview of some of the issues or highlights of his program, but if he can very briefly add, and then we'll move on to the other directors as well.
Honourable Chair and members, thank you very much. Good morning. Just a few items to highlight. In the Scientific Support Services Program, we are responsible for regulating the issue of anti-doping in the country. What I'd like to highlight is that our country was 100% compliant in terms of the World Anti-Doping Agency regulations, as well as the prescripts of the United Nations and the International Anti-Doping Agreement. With regards to our international relations, we signed 4 agreements with other governments, and there were 9 international exchange programs that took place. Then I'd just like to highlight that in respect of facilities coordination, that 278 municipalities were lobbied to build sport and recreation facilities, and that for the first time we have a sport facilities framework developed for the country. Then also that there were 7 donor funding projects that were efficiently managed by the unit on facilities, and we trained 110 facility managers in specialized sports turf grass management. Also, in the drive to build community gymnasiums, there were 16 against a target of 15 that were established by providing the necessary support, the research, etc., but also providing the equipment. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. On the MPP, I'm going to just highlight a few issues, I think, that were reported both by the Acting DG as well as the CFO. And the first one, I think the key one there are the spending trends. And to speak to it in terms of the focusing on the Northwest, under expenditure 69%, the issue there has been that 6% of the allocation to provinces is supposed to go to human resources. It's the program management unit to manage the grant. And some of the provinces, especially Northwest and we know Mpumalanga, have not taken full advantage of the 6%, have not put in the required personnel in terms of managing the grant. Northwest continued to be a problematic province, and in last year as well, SRSA, as this is a conditional grant and we manage the grant, if provinces continue not to comply, then the option is to hold back funds as well. Funds were delayed, as you would see, for 30 days. In the third quarter, Free State poor expenditure, KwaZulu-Natal poor expenditure, Northwest poor expenditure, and Mpumalanga in terms of reporting, and that's a management issue again. All of those provinces did respond and responded favorably, and except for Mpumalanga, who submitted after the stipulated period. But in terms of the monitoring, this is something that's ongoing. As far as SRSA is concerned, this is actually us improving our own monitoring systems as well, that we are able to enforce whatever, you know, regulations we do have with provinces to ensure compliance as well. As I said, the monitoring on the quality of spend remained a problem due to insufficient personnel at SRSA. However, this matter has been addressed in the new functional structure, where this is a priority area. We are funding 9 provinces. The amount is a huge amount, and the required number of monitoring personnel to go through all provinces, all hubs, and including areas where they are the schools that we are working in, requires a huge number of monitoring personnel. So that is something we are currently working on, with. On the management of the contract workers, this is another issue that has created problems, because in terms of the grant, it began as voluntary workers, provinces that were paying a stipend to voluntary workers. Some of the provinces then went on to contract voluntary workers for a period of 2 years or more, because once people were skilled, they needed to give them more opportunity. However, this led to labor problems. We've just undertaken a review on this matter. We've had an outside agency do a review. The review has been handed to SRSA, and it's currently with the Acting DG, and it's going to be made public. There are some very, very strong recommendations on how this should be managed. We've also had good examples, Western Cape, Free State, and Limpopo, that have currently managed the problem, and these are good examples that we can use with other provinces in terms of looking at the issue of job creation without getting ourselves into trouble. I think all the other areas have been covered. The feasibility study of the integration of hubs into wards, and here again I think it is moving from, in terms of the grant, supporting development and then looking at the issues of sustainability. There has been a success in this area. This has been completed, and there have been
wards that have been converted into NPO CBOs as well. So that's been very, very successful. The SNDP has reported on many of the community sport big events that were held. And I think it is important to state that there was 100% improvement in the management of the conditional grant to provinces. And I think this also stemmed from the business planning as well. We've managed to now engage provinces fully and take them through business planning from the start to the end so that this is, as we said, a conditional grant for SRSA to ensure there's delivery taking place in terms of SRSA priorities and the continued monthly monitoring and reporting on the grant, despite the challenge of, as we said, monitors, but we are managing to effectively report and enforce regulations as far as this is concerned. However, there is still room for this because the expanse of the country that we cover, I think, in terms of identifying every challenge and responding within good time on it. On the school sport issues, we did present jointly with education, and I think this report can be seen in that context. The challenges that have been raised with school sport here, we have addressed when we presented to this committee together with education. I think we've addressed all the challenges, and as the acting DG said, we are in the process now of further to presenting that integrated delivery plan to the select committee. We are now in the process of our ministers signing it off. We have had a full consultation last week with all the role players, governing bodies, teacher unions, federations, school sports structures, including all other agencies that are in partnership with Department of Education and ourselves. And I think this process is now, I would say the rollout has started already on that. I think that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we've done with our presentation.
Thank you, Acting DG and your delegation. I think because of the time, when members interact, even the issues that you didn't, because they're having a full presentation in front of them, they will be in a position to interact in the whole presentation. Acting DG, you know, I just want to say something here before I give to the members. You, under your challenges, you raised the thing, verification of information as a challenge. To me, I don't take it as a challenge. I take it as the right, you know, right step into the right direction. Because this is what, as members, we are asking ourselves, do we really get value for the money? Because you get where the department, the reports indicate that they spend 100%. But when you go to the ground, it's the opposite. You know, you just get the opposite. I don't take it as a challenge to us as members of parliament. We are saying this is the right thing that should happen, and this is what we've been appealing for. Honorable members, is an opportunity to interact with the presentation. Honorable Mube, Honorable Mushodi, Honorable Zivilias, Honorable Faba, and Honorable Blakey, for the meantime, if you can think of coming in.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. My first question will be on the transformation. In terms of more information or clarity. For instance, the examples of cricket, rugby, and the worst part of it is on how, it's on national symbols, the respect of the national symbols in from different sporting codes. Singing of the national anthem we've seen horrible things happening in Rabi repeatedly, and doing it wrong and apologize after, it's the wrong thing. It's our national symbol, it's our pride. But west also to that, it's when the players, when the national, let's say you put a CD, then you find them holding themselves like this. I mean, they must be told, they must be taught that stand attentive, the right way of singing national anthem. You only see America in sports, on TV, you see that they're proud of their national anthem. But with us, they hold each other, or they do whatever, their hands, whatever. And it goes to the managers. They always expect the respect of the national symbol. The other one, you haven't heard anything on what is the progress on 2010 legacy. We got a very beautiful plans on how we're going to do from different provinces on the 2010 legacy. But we're not hearing anything. The other one is on lotto funds. The minister has been raising repeatedly the problem on how lotto funds are being applied to, or how is it spent, the window on sports. You find that people are saying we're going to do a ground, but on top of the pitch on top of the pitch. And then have you made some intervention in terms of that? Lastly, the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It's 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011. In finance, if you have problems, that 3 years, you rather write it off and whatever. Why is it taking time to investigate? Maybe this time next year we're still investigating. Why is it difficult to finish the investigation? Who's doing the investigation? Why is it not becoming finished? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My first question will be on slide number 15. Insufficient capacity to monitor the conditional grant. My question will be, lack of skills and capacity at local level are some of the issues that cause poor service delivery. How does this impact on the SRSA program if provinces and municipalities are the key implementers of national policy and guidelines? And my second question, Honorable Chair, will be on this annual report on page 66 on program number 6. Program number 6. My question will be, how many personnel staff were involved in program number 6, and how does the department intend to rationalize or redeploy this personnel when the program is in this continuity? And the third question, Honorable Chairperson, on the same document on page 99, utilization of donors, is donor or donor fund. Then my question will be, are there any conditional attend to the donor fund from VTZ and AU of the annual report? How much was the donor funding? That is the question that I've got, Honorable Chairperson. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My first question is in connection with the 63 coaches. That was for athletics. It's not for all the sports. If that is the situation, from which provinces are these coaches and where are they now deployed? In which provinces are they now actually doing their work as planned by the Department of Sport and Recreation? Then, in connection with the vacancy level, level 6 to 8, the rate is 7, and 9 to 12, the rate is 11.
Now, and also in program 1, the rate is 22. Now, what is the situation in the department to remedy the situation that, because it is very high skilled workers who actually is not in the department, and it's very important that the department must make use of those skills. What is the situation to address that shortcoming in the department? And then there's some of the personnel, their salary exceeds the grade, and there are negotiations with some, and others will be filled in other posts as the structure is actually renewed. Now, what is the success rate of that situation? And then I also see that the sick leave, let me just go there on that situation, it's page 86. Yeah, 86, sick leave. Sorry for the delay, Honorable Chairperson. Now, amongst certain staff members, and especially amongst the highly skilled, 6 to 8, there's a 25.58% sick leave. And then 9 to 12, there's a 41.86%. And disability leave, there's a 33.33% in the levels 6 to 8, and 9 to 12, also 33.33%. And senior management 13 to 16 level, 33.33%. What is actually the problem? Why the situation of that percentage under those levels? Maybe the members and also the officials can differ with me, but I think that percentage is very high. Is there a problem? Or do the staff actually make use of this benefit to take leave to do other things? What is the situation about that? Because I'm very interested in that situation amongst sick leave. Because my previous employment, I was very on the dot to see that my colleagues don't misuse the sick leave and also the disability leave. And then, Honorable Chairperson, on the finance, there's just a few questions on the finance. It is very worrying, and I know there's a problem of money in government and in the department. 2008, 9, 4 million, 9, 10, 2 million, or 3 million, just round it off, and 2010, 11, 1.2 million. Now, 2011, 2012 will be, say, 800,000. So that is a problem. What is the situation about the budget for this program? Will it be better next year, or will we experience this downtrend in the budget allocation, and that will hamper the aim and objective of this department? And if so, what actually are you doing to prevent this further downtrend? To contact the finance department and to see that this department get the money which they have, what they want to use, actually to deliver services. And then the other one about the Boxing South Africa continue to experience problems with governance. Now, what is the plan and the programs to address this situation? Because I know there's a lot of problems among the boxes and also in this entity, but I want to see that this boxes and this boxing South Africa are going in the right direction, and also that the boxes do get the benefit as like cricket and rugby and soccer and so on. Now, I'm interested in the plans and the programs to assist Boxing South Africa so that they can get on a better level. You got that question? Yeah. And the last one, Honorable Chairperson, the 88% mass participation in the province Northern Cape and the 69% in the northwest. What is actually the challenges and the reasons to only spend that percentage on the mass participation problems? And is and what is the department actually doing to help the province to address those problems? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you know, we know everything, so I know the Sharks will win on Saturday as well. So yeah, let's go. I only got two questions. My colleagues did ask some of the questions. The one I would just like to know is the unauthorized expenditure of 704,000, which relates to the payment made to the SEASA Youth Conference. These payments were not in accordance with the purpose of the votes. Why did the department deviate from the purpose of the vote? I'd just like to know on that. And then also, the irregular, when we go to the financial part, the irregular expenditure for the current year was incurred due to non-compliance with supply chain management regulations, as well as non-compliance with the department delegation of authority. Why did this happen? As I suppose it is practice that supply chain management should be followed. Is that also part of the reason why there is action be taking and investigations on the way? I would just like to know that. Thank you,
Madam. Thank you, Honorable Father.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I thought I would not ask any questions from the presentation given. No, on the basis that we, in previous years, we have raised so many things with the Department of Education in terms of the school sports and mass participation and all other questions, particularly the question that Honorable Kinky have just asked about the national flags and all the other stuff. So what I want just to check, Chair, still is on this rollover on mass participation. Because I guess, if my memory serves me well, in all the reports, there is always a rollover on this program. So I want to check what does the department do with this rollover, with the provinces that are not using this money and actually sending it back. What is your corrective measures that you take in place to make sure that at least grants provided are utilized on things that are going to be useful. Maybe this question goes further, Chen, to say the department must also share with us whether if they allocate grants to provinces, those grants are not misappropriated and used for other purposes or are used for the grant for the purpose they intended. That question, just doing an extension. The last question, Chair, I'm sure this is the last one. I think in your presentation you said cases related to 2006, 2008 of the misconduct and you reopen those investigations. What I want to check, what are the compelling reasons for you to reopen the cases that you said you have closed them, now you reopen them. So So we want to check what are the compelling reasons. Maybe we must share with the community. Maybe the last thing you must also share with us with the money that you still owe to the FIFA. Just share with us what amount is it? Why is it not that money? Why are you not paying that amount of money that you still owe to FIFA? So these are the questions that I wanted to ask. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I've missed one of my questions, which I just quickly want to follow. That's almost part of the first part of questions, which was the cancellation and booked venue, which is still under investigation. And just underneath that, it says two employees implicated in the matter were transferred to correctional service. Now, I know, is that the job transfer, or were they actually trialed and then sent to correctional services? I just because, you know, if we redeploy people to correctional services after there's a 4.2 million loss, then if we just transfer them to another department, then I've got a problem. If they were transferred the correct way by being standing trial, then that's another thing. Then I'm okay with that. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Sir. That's a good question. Maybe they'll offend us as we are talking. Maybe to Honorable Plaki. Honorable Plaki, we are public representatives. And if issues are not addressed, we will talk and talk and talk till the department do the correct thing. So don't give up. This is our responsibility. We are the voices of the people on the ground. Before I give to the department, I just want to check under school sports. Because when we talk about school sports, we see the two departments, your sports and recreation and education. But one wonders, why don't we take agricultural department on board? Because kids, in order to be fit, they need nutrition. When you visit, my reason for asking this question is that when you visit most of the schools, you find that where the sporting facilities, like your playground and all that, there's still a lot of land which is not used. Why can't we take the Department of Agriculture on board so that we educate learners to grow their own plants and to clean their schools? I just want to check, why are we not taking the Department of Agriculture on board? The other question is on mass participation. I'm still on a hope, like I said, as public representatives, we must ask this question. And I'm still going to repeat what I asked. Do we get value for the money for this program? Because this program is a good program, but are we contributing? What are the results towards the professional sports in South Africa out of this program? Maybe to take the question of Honorable Mushudi further on the funding that we received from Devon Development Bank. One would like to know, did rural areas benefit from this fund? And if they've benefited, in which provinces? And again, under that, according to the annual report, you know, the report says this funding was used for paying for compensation of the employees, which I feel that it was not meant for paying. How does the department account for this? Because really, the funding was not used for what it was supposed to. One would like to get. Actually, how is the department going to account, or how is it accounting to that? Lastly, is on page 63, where the department has exceeded, you know, the target of gymnasium established, you know, that you are supposed to establish, because your target was 50, and you managed to establish 60. One is interested to know, did the rural
areas benefited from this program, and if so, in which provinces? Lastly, I just want to talk to, you know, under emphasis of matters, the issue of that 704,000 which was used for that youth conference. You know, this thing has been, you know, coming up every time. Even before, you know, I've never thought that I'll be in the NCOP. This is what's the issue. But one doesn't get how is the department, if it needs to be, you know, the people who are supposed to refund, if ever this is what department is thinking, one would expect to get a report, because what is occurring here is what appeared also in the last term, in the last administration, the first parliament. But one seems that it will always appear here, and you don't get even a process report. Like Honorable Blighty indicated, we've got cases. One was expecting to get a progress report on those cases. What is happening to the official state? Not to say that the matter is still under investigation, because last time it was still under investigation. Can we get a progress report on those matters? Thank you. Over to the department.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm going to request our officials to respond to many of them, and then the acting DG, Mr. DM, wants to respond as well, then they'll be given an opportunity as well. Can we start with the CFO, please, sir?
The first question was... Thank you, Honorable Chair. The first issue which I want to respond to the members is about the fruitless expenditure that is not resolved on time basis, if I can put it that way. And basically the reason is that the department does not have an internal investigation capacity, and as a result they are using external people to do the investigation, and it takes them a long time to come to the department, ask the relevant people, and conclude on that. And as a result, these things are still sitting in the annual report, because you cannot write them off until you've got a concluded report which makes a recommendation to the accounting officer. So as we are sitting here now, we don't have the final report from the investigation officer and from the disciplinary process. And then the other issue is about the budget allocation of the department. Why is it declining? Members will remember that our department was tasked with overseeing the building of the stadium for the 2010 World Cup. So in those years, those billions that you see in our allocation was precisely allocated for the 2010 World Cup host cities. So as you can see, after the conclusion of the World Cup host cities as well as the World Cup itself, the funding stopped there because it was a conditional allocation for the stadium. So if you look to the budget of the department excluding the World Cup allocation, if we separate it, you can see there is a marginal increase in terms of the budget allocation. It's not enough, as well as some of our projects are not funded. But members should just ignore that the allocation was specific for the World Cup. Another issue raised was about the donor funding that the department is actually receiving. I would like also to make members aware that we don't actually get a transfer of funds into our bank account to use for this donor funding. This donor funding is in kind, if I can put it that way, that there is an agreement with KFW, for example, to build kickabouts, which are multi-purpose sports facilities. Then we will appoint a service provider and they will do this. So that amount for the KFW project is 5.5 million euros. 4.5 million euros. So that's the whole amount which the KFW has made available to us. And the other funding we also get is from the GIZ, and also is also had a donation in kind of 7.5 million euros. The other issue raised in terms of one of the financial reports is the spending in the provinces, basically the Northern Cape and Northwest. If the Northern Cape, basically, they are underspending, I can say, is because of the supply chain processes which they were instituted late. So when we went for the report, they did not actually spend the funds, but the funds were already committed. So the provinces requested the rollover in terms of the project of the previous financial year. If we come to Northwest, there is where we had a problem because of the administration. They spent a long time without an HOD, and there were suspension, and people did not know exactly what to do. So as a result, you know, in terms of their project were delayed, and it talks to that. That is why members can see that the spending is very slow there. The other issue which I also like to share with the members is about the unauthorized expenditure, which members need clarity about it, of the data. And the chairman is right that this happened when he was still in the portfolio committee. The process of dealing with unauthorized expenditure is far different to irregular expenditure and fruitless, because when an unauthorized expenditure is in case, it can only be condoned by the SCOPA. We have made a presentation to SCOPA, and we are waiting a condonement from SCOPA. As I indicated, this was in relation to a youth conference that was hosted in the year 2007. The other question raised was, why did the department incur irregular expenditure in the current financial year? That amount of 389,000. During the World Cup, one of the department in terms of the legacy project was hosting a school's World Cup in the Eastern Cape. And the officials appointed to run the project, what they did, they entered into a verbal agreement with Kanyesa Community-Based Care. And these officials were not actually authorized to enter into an agreement, whether verbal or written, because only the accounting officer can sign. So basically, they were doing work for the department, but, you know, they were supposed to, after whatever they have agreed, to reduce it in writing and hand over to the accounting officer to authorize them. So basically, that is what happened there. And, you know, the service provider assisted in hosting that school's World Cup, so we had to pay the service provider, but the reason is that the officials were supposed to have requested the accounting officer to sign the agreement, not themselves to enter into an agreement on behalf of the department. The other issue is about the issue of the cancellation of the venue, include the venue at the Beijing Olympics, honorable members, where the venue that was booked to host the ECHA was cancelled, because our officials did not go to the Beijing Olympic Conference, that's 4.2 million. The officials who were transferred to correctional services were working in the Department of Sports and Recreation, and they were responsible for the ECHA Beijing project. So therefore, the case has got to follow them where they are working at the current moment. So it is... Yeah.
Of course, these people took up other posts
in the correctional services. Yeah. Members also asked about the rollovers of mass participation grants. What is the department doing? On monthly basis, the department is engaging with the provincial department, you know, on you know, to check the progress in terms of the money allocated to them. And towards the financial year, normally, we make sure that if at all the provincial department have committed funds for them, so that the money they get in the following year must not be used for the project of the previous year, we make sure that their requests for rollovers are processed and submitted to Treasury. And if approved, they are able, you know, to pay for the expenses for the previous year with the money that has been rolled over. The FIFA VAT outstanding issue. Members will be. I just want to remind members that if you look at the financial report, you can see that there's a 40 million spent on the FIFA VAT ticket. This amount was actually an estimation on, or maybe let me rephrase this answer to say, our government have committed to FIFA in terms of the 17 guarantee that one of the guarantees was that FIFA will get a discount on VAT. Instead of paying 14% VAT that they have collected, they will pay 12.3% of VAT. So whatever sales they've done in terms of the FIFA tickets, they had to receive a discount. And when the estimation was done in the previous financial year, it was estimated that the 40 million amount will be sufficient to pay for the FIFA World Cup ticket refund. Only to find out when the FIFA World Cup was finalized in the previous financial year, at the end of September, we compiled a reconciliation together with Ernst & Young, where we found that there was a shortfall of 16.6 million. That must be payable as a discount to FIFA. So in terms of transfer payment, the department did not budget that 16.6 because by the time we sent our request, we did not anticipate that there will be a shortfall in terms of the VAT. Hence, in this current financial year, and especially yesterday, if you look at the adjustment estimate budget, one of the requests from our department is the 16.6 million to settle specifically the VAT refund of FIFA. So it will appear this year as an additional transfer which we are going to make to FIFA. I think the 704 data amount as addressed. It's still sitting there. It can only be condoned after proper resolution. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, good morning. I will take a few questions, and I will start with the question that the CFO has already spoken to, and just give more details on the donor funding. Firstly, the question was, are there any conditions? Yes, there are conditions. The conditions, the donor funding is specifically for a program which is called Youth Development Against Violence Through Sport. So the main objective is not really to build the facilities. The main objective is to use sport to deal with a variety of social ills. Now, what therefore happens is that the component of construction of facilities is specifically to look at the youth, the facilities that are suitable for youth and are suitable for the violence prevention program. So it is predominantly your more of a combination courts, which can be used for various ball sports. That's one of the conditions. So, full size facilities cannot really be built using this funding. In terms of the question on whether the rural areas benefited, what we did as a part of implementing those, we were not sure how to progress. So we ran a test or pilot. Projects, seven pilot projects which are reported in the annual report, and those pilot projects were in Lekhalong, which is a village outside Rustenburg, Khamanamela, which is a village outside Bulugwane, Bachu location, which is in Mangaung, in Bloemfontein, and then Wadduhuza in KwaZulu-Natal, Kunu in King Sabata Dalinjebo municipality, Ikwezi, which is just outside PE, and Jansenville, to be specific in terms of the location, those were the pilots, Winterfeld. I nearly left out Winterfeld, which is outside Tshwane. It is not really an urban area as such, although it's within the city of Tshwane, but it is predominantly a semi-rural and a disadvantaged area. Those are the sites where we ran the pilot program. Now, for the second phase, which we are implementing now, I can safely report to the committee that it is almost 100% rural bias in terms of our approach. So those sites have actually been identified. One of the conditions that the donors attached was that we cannot identify municipalities. We need to call for an expression of interest, which we have done. So municipalities responded, but we managed to make sure that even though we do a call of expression of interest, we try to assist the more rural municipalities to meet the requirements so that they can be included in the program. So as we managed to achieve the rural fires there. Which provinces, I think I've been able to also just outline which provinces have been covered. And in terms of the second phase, all the provinces will then be covered in terms of phase two. The other question that was raised related to the lotto funds, I'm going to answer an aspect of the question which relates to the grounds that are built on top of the other grounds. We also received this concern that this program is being implemented by the LOC, which is now SAFA, using the funds that they applied for from the National Lotteries Board. We have then subsequently engaged them to really get the gist of what exactly is happening. Is it indeed true that some of these facilities are built on top of the other facilities? The indication was that when they presented to us that where an artificial pitch is laid on an existing pitch, it is actually an upgrading of that pitch because that the condition of the pitch is not usable. So that is basically, and then they were able to give us the visuals in terms of what the pitch looked like before upgrading and what it looks like after upgrading. The other question that was raised was related to the gyms. Yes, the gyms, again, we have got the rural bias in terms of almost all the sites, with the exception perhaps of George Tabe, which is in the Mfuleni municipality. Although, I mean, if you look at Mfuleni municipality, it's also not that much of a privileged municipality compared to the metropolitan municipalities. I think that covers the questions that were raised.
Can we move to the next one to talk?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to respond to the issue of the training of coaches. In the scientific support program, when we are talking about those coaches that are trained, firstly, they are not trained only for athletics as in running, but for other sports as well. And they are trained in respect of the scientific support that they provide. So it's not in administration and other components. So this is scientific, how to use sports science when they coach. So that is the training there. Unfortunately, I don't have the figures here, but we do maintain a database so that all the figures relating to any training that is offered as to who has been trained, whether it's male, female, all the demographic information is available in a database that is maintained in the department, so we can make that information available. The question relating to Boxing South Africa, relating to the governance problems and is there a turnaround strategy, what is the department doing? Yes, there have been governance problems, we all know. for a fairly lengthy period of time in Boxing South Africa. These problems persisted through the previous board, who were unable to address governance issues, regardless of the fact that the department was addressing each issue with them. So I think with the appointment of a new board, it's one positive step, because what we advised the minister specifically here when he was appointing was to ensure that there is a wide variety of the required skills and competencies amongst the board members so that they can fulfill their responsibilities in terms of financial management, in terms of the legal compliance with the country's laws and prescripts, with regards to the issue of marketing of the sport. So a new board has been appointed, which I must report is really doing, you know, the kind of work that has to be done. I've attended their first board meeting, and they are very much moving in the right direction. They have already, in the short space of time, met with SABC TV, they have met with ETV, and they had appointments with some of the other smaller television service providers. They have reported that the talks with both ETV as well as SABC has progressed very well, that they are looking at bringing back the television coverage on Fridays, and not at a late time slot where people are not interested, but bringing it back to perhaps around 8 o'clock, and it's looking very positive. So in terms of marketing, in terms of television revenue, which they have lost previously, largely due to poor governance, because nobody wants to sponsor a sport where there's poor governance. You don't want to be associated with it. They have managed to address that issue. But also, they are on a drive looking at their own sponsorships. So outside of this kind of revenue, they are raising funds through other means as well. So I think in terms of the financial side, the financial accountability, a proper CEO has been appointed. I would like to point out that for the first time, the department has received from the CEO a very good financial analysis from the CEO in respect of what the financial problems of boxing have been. And it has amounted to the fact that Boxing South Africa has been given a mandate. However, that mandate has been very poorly funded. And the analysis clearly shows that. So we have, with the CEO and our CFO and DG, addressed this issue at National Treasury. National Treasury has no problem in us increasing the funding for Boxing South Africa in terms of its mandate so that it can function properly. However, National Treasury is not in a position to increase the funding of the department in this matter. They've asked the department to reprioritize, and we have indeed mentioned to Boxing that we will increase their allocation based on reprioritization within the department so that they can at least address issues of meeting the operational costs. So for the program costs, they will find funding through various sources. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Let me just give to the Deputy Minister that you wanted to respond to some of the issues so that you can be released at quarter to 12.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, but I think the department is more or less through all the questions. Can I just ask for clarity, Chair? It's only Mr. Leroux that has to respond, and I know him to be short. Can we ask him to respond and then we wrap up? That's all.
Honourable Deputy Minister, we are not going to rest up. We are, as members, we still want to engage with you all. We are having time till going about 12.
Thank you, Chair. In that case, then let me just briefly respond to some of the questions raised, Chair. Transformation. transformation can't be limited to rugby and cricket only. Transformation is a wider concept. Transformation starts right at school level, where opportunities are created for people. That is the talent pool we develop. That is the potential we have to unlock. And that is why on the 5th of November this year, there will be a, do I call it Erasmus, TG, what do I call it, with education, where the first step towards that is achieved. Secondly, honorable members, transformation is not about replacing one person with another person. Transformation is a process where you really endeavor to get all our children to the very same starting line. We have, when we presented, honorable members may recall, on the sport and recreation plan, we did allude to the necessity of transformation. We were very vocal then, and we are still now vocal about the no shortcuts to it, whilst identifying a catch-up strategy to say that we have to get our children to the same starting line. As a consequential of the Indaba, we envisage certain consequentials will come. Some may be legislative, others may be regulatory, but I think it's quite clear that the realignment of funding to make every rand work so that we tap into the potential and create the conducive environments for all our children, that will be a consequence of the sports endowment. I have no doubt. It impacts on something else. We have never in the sporting society had a plan to present either to a sponsor, to foreign donors, to national treasury to say, this is our plan, funded, buy into it. It was something that's on the roll. For the first time, we are now talking to the corporate sector, to treasury, aligning the budgetary processes and so on to achieve the real transformation linked with leadership development. You see, honorable members, transformation is not only on the field of play. Transformation is a wider concept. It also relates and translates to leadership development. I have got nothing. I'm also aging. But in some of these places, you get people who've been there forever. You know, honorable chair, because the lack of developmental programs, leadership development, creating of opportunities for people. So I'm convinced that, chair, we will unpack this further at the meeting we will have shortly again before the Indaba, as promised with the select committee. I think the date is set, I heard yesterday afternoon, for us to go to talk to this more comprehensively. National symbols. Honourable members, look, there's nothing that irritates one more. Even me, if I stand and I see members of parliament, when we sing the national anthem, this one's ear is itching, that one has got their hand in the pocket, that other one is standing with his hands in front of him, and the other one is more interested in your handbag or so on. So it's a wider concept. But my comrade is correct if she's saying that it has to start with a process where we are showing from the national team's respect towards that. Now, in terms of the people saying that some time ago, that asked the question, because standing down there with their drill and pumping is sometimes quite different. They want to hold one another with their hand on the heart, because showcasing they're prepared to die for the country under the flag. We will take this up. I don't think they were told to stand at attention. They know they have to stand at attention. They know the anthem. But the point is taken, and we will come and report back specifically on that particular one, honorable members. In terms of the singing of the anthem, the unfortunate part is that the federations are not always the people arranging these events, nor is it the Department of Sport. You find, I'm using an example, the International Rugby Board or the Australians are arranging the thing. They are the hosts, and they go through a process, and what they normally ask is give us a CD of your music, of your national anthem, that's given. And if they get a rasta and he messes up our thing, it is they that arrange it, not us. We take action, absolutely, without now starting a third world war. Because that's easy in sport to do there. And the last time, I mean, the function was not arranged and organized by SA Rugby or sport at all. Where this other guy got so stage frightened or whatever that he couldn't sing the anthem, and we dealt with that. It's not the sporting fraternity arranging those things. The problem, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of Sport, is this. The moment there's a big event or something happening, you get all sorts of people who want to be on the TV. And you get all sorts of service providers arranging these things. You get sponsors coming to the fore saying, we want to arrange this for these people. And then it's a little bit, you can give the protocol guidelines, you can do everything, but then it's out of your hands, so to say. We did take a lot of action. We welcome the apologies and the corrective measures they took to rectify the process. And lastly, Honorable Chair, let me observe, we have stopped the process to engage our sister Department of Arts and Culture with a view to get a uniform rhythm and pace of the national anthem. Me, I can personally attest. I went to one federation the other Friday evening. They had their interprovincial and national championships. They get this beautiful lady with a beautiful voice. She now sings the national anthem. I think I'm at the funeral. I really thought I was at the funeral, the way she dragged out our national anthem. Pronounced the words perfectly, but the rhythm was totally out. Everybody stood at attention. You go to the other places, others beat it up. So we need a format of our national anthem as we know it, so that it's there. And we are engaging our sister department to that effect. And knowing my comrades there, we know we will have a very positive response to that one. Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, in terms of the lot of funding, which was the other question, we are engaging. The minister has been very vocal about the lot of funding and the alignment of funding, but as I said in the beginning, as a consequential from the sports team dive and the sports plan, we envisage a process where we will have to align the funding to make sure that we get the best results for sport, and not this thing where you have to apply all the time, because there will be a sports plan. And against the sports plan, it will then be in a position to say, with the money available, this is what we can achieve, and this is where we're going to apportion the money. The very same thing goes to high-performance sport. You can't give people a responsibility with an unfunded mandate. They will never, ever in their life be able to deliver, honorable members. We will have to look at the predictable process where they know this is what we're going to receive, provided we deliver on the mandate we've received. You can't just pour money into something if they don't deliver. So, Honorable Chairperson, we have had discussions with trade and industry. It's positive. There are certain processes that will have to be followed. We don't have received the final outcome of it yet. And I don't want to pronounce what will be ideal for us, and I read tomorrow in the newspapers, and then I have a lot of opposition even before we put the thing on the table. But the question we have to ask, how effective is a distribution agency? Yes, perhaps in the absence of a sports plan, but if you have a sports plan in place, the question really arises, how effective is a distribution agency? But they may not rather be ring-fenced against the rollout of the sports plan. The very same we've achieved with the MIG to assist us in catching up the backlog in facilities. We now have a portion of money ring-fenced in the municipal infrastructure grant. 100% for sport and recreation facilities are upgrading or the rollout of new ones. So, Honorable Chair, with the limited time, and I respect the time of the committee, and now you want to check in by the chair, I thought I would just want to share those views and ask you to excuse me. I have to be with the Deputy President at 12 o'clock for a meeting, please, Chair. That's where I'm rushing off to. With your permission, please.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. But I just want to talk to the issue of transformation. We can sit here as politicians and as officials and understand what does transformation entails and how can we. But if we are lacking in public awareness, because the reality is that people out there, they don't understand transformation the way we understand. So it means we've got, as a department, we still have a challenge to go out and educate our people. Ordinary people, you know, if we were listening to the discussions towards the rugby, they were saying this is, you know, to them it's like black and white. So it means we are still having a lot to do. I think it's one of the challenges that, as the department, we will have to take it serious. Lastly, on the issue of the singing of our national assets, it also goes back to the issue of public awareness. How do we teach our ordinary people? Because the reality is that what is happening now after 1994, we used to have those national anthems, and they were respected. And, you know, today it's like we are too democratic. Everyone does as he or he wishes. Really, that's some of the issues that personally I feel that we cannot really come and justify them. It says we are not doing what we are supposed to be doing. On that note, Deputy Minister, you are released, and let's allow acting DG. We still have it. Thank you, Deputy Minister. Were there still outstanding questions before I allow for? Yeah.
Madam Chair, there is the issues around the human resources and MPP as well.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, there were four questions, mostly human resource related. The first one was on Program 6, which was 2010 unit, the rationalization of that staff. And unfortunately, for time purposes, we didn't go through the corporate services report per se, but if one go and look on slide 25, it is addressed. There were 10 staff members appointed on contract, and they were all released when those contracts expired, 10 staff members. Obviously, they were given opportunity to also apply for additional positions, but in most cases, they were very specific. Their skills and everything was very specific. They couldn't just be accommodated within the department. So there were 10 people, they were on contract, and those contracts expired. So they were managed out of the department. The second question was on the vacancy levels. And it is an issue that was also raised last week in the portfolio committee, and we acknowledge it is a problem in the department. I think even the chief financial officer would concur. Unfortunately, if one go and look, the majority of the vacancies in the department is in with administration, supply chain and finance and human resources, and those people are very mobile. They're on the levels 8, 7, 8, which is production workers. They're very mobile because all departments in government have got the same functions in supply chain and finance, the PAS system, the logos systems, and so forth. It is very difficult for us to retain those people. We acknowledge that our retention strategy is not working, so much so that in the Departmental Bargaining Council, we've now started a project with the labor unions or the organized labor to see if we can do something around this. Because whenever people leave, we have an exit interview, we get the information, and people would say, now I'm leaving for higher salary, which is very difficult for the department to address. But we are of the opinion that's not the real reason. There is something deeper, but we really need the cooperation of organized labor in addressing the issue. 43% of the people, and that again is on slide 25, 43% of the people who left indicated it for higher salaries, and they went to other departments. So they actually just transferred into a higher salary level in another department. And it's very difficult. The department can't continuously keep on making counter offers. The third question was on salaries that exceed the grade. Yes, it is true. And the biggest reason for this is historical. With the exception of two people, which is in the annual report indicated, which the department made counter offers to try and retain them. All the other people came from the old South African Sports Commission, and most of them were either on higher salary levels or they had a travel allowance as a perk. which is not catered for within the bands and the salary levels of government. So those travel allowances was included as salary, and therefore they're on the higher salary level. We are managing that through natural attrition. I think two people, three people already retired, of those people, and the others, some of them have been promoted and so forth. So in the next one, these figures will totally different. So we are managing it, we are fully aware of it, but it is also very difficult. The other one is, like I said, two people were made counter office key positions, and the department retained them on high alert salary. I made the example last week in this portfolio committee as well. I recently lost my security manager, and we were able to make him a counter offer salary wise, but we couldn't offer him the prestige of the highest job, the higher level. We could give him a salary of a deputy director, but we couldn't give him deputy director post, and therefore he left for the Eastern Cape. It's very difficult in our small structure to accommodate these kind of things. It is a problem, but we are working on that. The last one was the issue of the sick leave and disability leave, and we can do some more research there, but I don't think we are above the average of government. If one look at the average per employee, it's about 8 days sick leave, which people took per year, which is well within the 30 days over a three-year period. And then if we look at the disability leave as well, it's only three people, and one must remember that disability leave actually only kick in once your 30 days is exhausted in a period of time. It's not a recurring thing, so it would happen after 3 years or so forth when it is exhausted, your sick leave. But I also need to say that it is one of the areas that the AG audits every year. They're very particular, they audit those, and they didn't have a problem with it. And also just to say then that we do manage it within the framework of the Public Service Act, the Public Service Regulation, and obviously within PILA for disability readers as well. So we can do some more research and have a look, but I think we in the norm of public service. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Of
course, the MPP.
Thank you, Chair. The CFO has covered some of the questions on MPP. The one in terms of the insufficient capacity to monitor conditional grant, how does this impact on SRSA programs if municipalities and provinces are the key implementers? This is an area that has come up again now in the review that we've asked the independent agency to conduct for us, and it is an area that for us we've highlighted as something that does impact, because if you have provinces that may have management in place, but lower down, if you go down to municipalities and local areas, that is the challenge in terms of, is there sufficient staff? There is a proposal that we've got now out of this in terms of how are we going, what are we proposing to provinces? And one of the proposals that we've got is to put in a program management unit. So the agency that we've tasked with the responsibility has come up with a clear proposal on how this can be done, and this is what we're going to be proposing to provinces to put this in place, and then out of the grant look at how we could do that, because while 6% allows for the provincial management structure, the grant itself looks at having coordinators in place at different levels, and we need to look at also now creating even if there's greater management required at local level, we're going to have to put that in place. But there is a proposal that has come through with the review for this matter. On the issue of the involvement of the Department of Agriculture, thank you for that, Madam Chair. We have examples like in Western Cape that we've seen now, and that is what we've held a meeting there with the other provinces to look at how some provinces are doing it. The Western Cape example is they've involved Department of Social Development. So we deliver this program as school sports. This is a school sport mass participation program. It's an after-school program, and social development has come on to provide meals for children after school. So this is your suggestion is taken on board. I do know of schools where Department of Agriculture has put in the organic farming on the school premises, and where they are working them as community gardens and community farms. But we would approach agriculture on this. Thank you for that and follow up, and I will report to you the next time on how that has gone. The other question was, do we get value for money, and what are the results towards the professional sports in South Africa out of this mass participation program? In terms of our reports coming through from the provinces, and specifically, I can speak on the school sports program because there's mass participation and there's organized competitive activity. The reports coming through, and we do have those athletes, the names come through, that are performing well, that have moved out of the mass participation program into competition and into national programs as well. So there is that trend, we can see it. I was also pleasantly, I'm not going to say surprised because I wasn't surprised, it was pleasant to note that in the mass participation review report that this independent agency had done for us, they picked up on this as well. The fact that the mass participation program is doing good work. You know, it was, do you get rid of it or what? I said, no, it is doing good work. And one of the things they picked up on was that athletes are moving out of mass participation into federation activity at provincial and national level. So I think that is happening. Once again, in terms of are we getting value for money, the review that we've conducted now comes up with all those challenges that I think you've raised, we noted, but looking clearly now at what solutions do we put in place. And we are in that phase now where we're saying we also need to look at how does this, how much longer do we hold on to the grant and release the grant to provinces as well, where it becomes part of equitable share. But we've put in now looking at that next level. How do we enforce? And looking at the exit strategy as well. And part of these issues are within that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, if I can just speak about the 2010 legacy. You would recall that there was a fair amount of funding that came from FIFA to SAFA with regard to a legacy, the legacy of the World Cup, and for them to establish a trust that will then monitor and implement projects using funding. The trust has been set up. There has been a trust set up, and the department is represented on the trust. They have just registered the trust, and the trust will be having its first meeting at the end of November. There is representation from SAFA on the trust, the Department of Sport, and the FIFA officials as well. So that first meeting now takes place in November. Madam Chair, the department also conducted its own social legacy audit coming out of the sport, coming out of the World Cup. And we have just presented the report to our minister and our deputy minister, and we will make the report available as well to this committee. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Honourable members, the time is 12 o'clock, meaning that we are left with 15 minutes. So I'll give you a chance. Dr. Madlala, actually, I'm not going to respond, but I just want to indicate something here. When the question was raised around this long outstanding investigation that we don't get a progress report, personally, I feel that your response to that, it says that the department is not serious. You give tasks to the external sources, but you don't attach time frames to that. Anyone can take advantage of that. If you are saying do investigation and no time frames attached, anyone can just take as long time as he or he wishes. I think it's something that the department will have seriously to look into that. I'm not convinced your answer when you are saying this is done by the external investigation. You are the one who gave that to the external investigation. One expects to have time, you know, your time frames for that. You can't just say do this and just leave it as it. I'm not convinced. I think next time we are going to get a better report on that matter. The issue of the donation in kind. You know, if you check in your annual reports, most of the funds were used for compensation. then you respond as this came as a donation in kind. You know, I think as we are seated here, we know that when you talk about a donation in kind, what is that? It doesn't imply cash. But really, I feel that these two points I should indicate that personally I'm not convinced, and one would expect to get a better response to that. On that note, honourable members, let me just give you an opportunity to ask. This is the second round. Honourable Mude. Or firstly, let me say, if the follow-up, is it follow-up?
Yes.
Is there any member who wants to make a follow-up?
Yeah, a follow-up.
Is a new question.
Yes.
Honourable Villas?
Follow-up.
Is a follow-up. Yes. Then, no, it's okay. It will be Honourable Mube, Honourable Blackie, Honourable Villas, and in that sense.
Yeah, thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, let me just agree with you that this is tantamount to shifting the blame and not taking responsibility. That's the question of the cases still under investigation. The last time we met with you, the cases were investigation. And I'll then link it up with the issues that the AG raised on the financial misconduct. He raised issues on leadership, the lack of oversight responsibility regarding the financial and performance reporting, as well as compliance with applicable laws. The whole question of saying an employee made an argument of a tender of whatever it is without following proper procedures, that's, I mean, it can't be done. I've never been given responsibility. I was a treasurer of COSATU. I knew exactly that the three quotations. And you can't assign a service provider to do the work without following those two. I mean, it's a known thing. It's a known thing. So the leadership, I would say, really, it's missing. So the question of, I mean, also, I know the PFMA also, in any organization in terms of the, it says you must put the risk, how do we identify the risk and put policies to manage those risks. Now, you are telling us even today that the department does not have internal investigation unit. It means 2014, 2016, we still have this problem because we are not putting policies in terms of the risk management. We're not, even when we employ an external person, you can't just give a blanket check. Do this, and the service provider takes 10 years to do that. The question of, like I was saying, if there is money, whatever it is, if I'm not dealing with that in terms of law, after 3 years, you write it off. And then after 3 years, we'll hear that you have applied to the, what do you call it? You said you need a resolution. You have applied to SCOPA to write it off. And that's what you don't want. So it means any employee can do these things and got out free.
Honorable Mude, I was expecting
that. Honorable
Blackie, is a follow-up. Can you go straight to the point?
No, we'll go straight to the point. Chair, first. I have raised a question. It was never answered. I was sitting here to listen if the department will respond on the matter of closed and open cases. I wanted actually to check with the department what are the compelling reasons for them to reopen those cases. And the other question on mass participation, Chair, which I ask again about rollovers, that the provinces are continually doing that. what are the consequences for provinces who are not using this money? Because I don't see, hear them responding to the consequences for provinces for not using the money given to them. They always roll over the money and wait for an open pigeonhole so that they must reapply to get those money back to pay for the previous year. What are the consequences that that's the follow-up question I wanted to check.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. That was exactly my question about the rollovers. I can just add there is 4.669 million rand. And to my understanding, there's a lot of problems about service delivery in that area.
Thank you, Honorable Mashoti.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. And my question will be, when is the department likely to get an unqualified audit report without any matter of emphasis? Just a clean audit report. That is my question, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I would just like to know, maybe I didn't understand this transfer to correctional services thing quite correctly, because it just seems people get transferred. And then they get, then they let the correctional services take disciplinary action. I want to know what the Department of Sport, because it was while they were in the Department of Sport, not while they were in the Department of Correctional Services. So I want to know, are they going to correctional services? Because that's where I want to see people that steal public funds. So to me, I want to know, is that going to be investigated? Are we just going to, is it also going to be a thing that next year we won't even see it on the report? Because it's a lot of money. It's public money. And then the other thing, I don't know if I did get a clear answer on this, or maybe I'm just not up to it today. But, I asked the question on this SEASA youth conference, and these payments were not according to the purpose of the vote. And I don't think I got a clear answer on that. I would like to know, do I have to ask the minister in a written question so that I will get a clear indication on that? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Acting DG, you've got 5 minutes to respond.
Madam Chair, if I can just quickly go to, firstly, the issue of the MPP rollovers. I think the CFO had indicated that rollovers, people apply for rollovers in instances where there were commitments made in the previous financial year. There were order numbers issued for procurement of goods, and it was just a matter of paying it, and for that reason they applied for the rollover. Madam Chair, also, if we look at what action are we taking against the provinces? Madam Chair, what we did last year, we started, in fact, in this financial year, is when we allocate funding to the provinces, normally it would be in terms of the equitable share of the provinces, giving them in terms of the size of the province, et cetera, looking at a national norm. But this year we looked at other aspects, and one of the aspects was performance. We took into consideration there was a percentage that we allocated to each of the criteria in awarding them funding. And one of the aspects was the performance. If provinces did not use their funding as per their business plans, etc., then we didn't give them funding as we had given them in the past. So we thought that was one of the ways we said that we can say to provinces, there are provinces that were performing well, so we needed to give them then more funding, because constantly when we sit with the provinces in meetings, a lot of provinces says, we're always giving our reports on time, we're meeting our targets, we're spending the money as per our business plan, and we sit in meetings and we hear other provinces, we say there's under expenditure, they're not spending the money as per their business plan, each quarter they're underspending. So why don't you give us the money, because we are showing evidence of having spent the money. So in this last financial year, we resolved that we would actually look at performance of provinces as one of the criteria. And if you look at the allocations from previous year, you will see that some provinces got lesser than they've gotten previous years based on that. The transfer to correction services, Madam Chair, is the officials concerned, the one, both the officials, the one transferred in terms of deployment of the SMS, and it was something that was a ministerial prerogative. So the one official was transferred to correctional services by that means. The other official applied for a post in correctional services. And he was successful in getting the post, and hence he transferred to correctional services. So it wasn't something that was initiated by the department. However, in terms in the public service, when we have disciplinary cases against officials, if they move out of the department, either resigning or transferring, if they resigned, unfortunately, there's not much we can do in terms of disciplinary action, but we can bring criminal cases against them. But if they're moving, if they fall within the public service, then we're obliged to transfer the cases to those relevant to other departments. And if we look at this case is still open with the Department of Correctional Services. We had started, in fact, when the official went over initially, there were still processes that we had in place, and we completed those processes with the official, and then we handed over the case. But we are getting regular reports, and I know that this case is still open with the correctional services.
President, for reopening, maybe we should address the issue of honor for reflecting. Reopening of the cases. If we don't know,
we don't have information here on hand.
Madam Chair, I would like to request that in terms of all the cases that are reported, we request that we submit a report, a detailed report, a progress report on all of those cases instead of dealing with them piecemeal.
The question of the clean. What is the
problem? Yeah. Madam Chair, I think we have reported that we have regular audit steering committee meetings. We have budget and expenditure meetings. We have a risk committee and risk management meeting. We've gone through, and on a regular basis, what we're doing is we've compiled a list of all the issues that come out of our audit, the AG's report to us. And then we've also looked at previous years, whatever's come out of the AG's report and if there are still matters attending. We have an action plan to address those issues. And I think what the Auditor General has already started engaging with us for the next audit. And what we're doing is as we're picking up issues that's coming out of the Auditor General's report, preliminary report, we're ensuring that we are adhering to it. But I must add, Madam Chair, is that it's very difficult for us to say whether we're going to get a clean audit or not, because it's generally up to the Auditor General to make that that call. But from our side, whatever we can see in terms of compliance, etc., we do acknowledge from the reports that have come through that there are many issues around compliance, and we are addressing it through our regular audit steering committees that we have twice a month in the department. Madam Chair, I must also add that, if you look at the CFO's presentation in terms of some of the expenditure being irregular and delegated authority, we have raised this with the Auditor General. Some of the issues, especially around documentation, supporting documentation, at the time when the services were rendered, at the time when service providers rendered those services, there were valid VAT certificates that was issued to us. But going forward, when the auditors come in, it's like 3 or 4 or 5 or even more months later, and then they do a verification on the current status of those service providers. And at that time, they found that those service providers did not have a valid VAT certificate. And hence, they made their call that it was irregular because there was no VAT certificate. But at the time when the services were required from us, and the time when payment was made, all of those documents were valid at the time. It is just that in terms of verification by the Auditor General, that took place much later, that those certificates were now not valid. So from our side, we've done everything to comply with some of those regulations, but obviously the audit period and the compliance period and the delivery period are not the same, and hence that. And we've actually said in our response, in our management response to those queries, we've actually said we disagree with those with the comments from the AG. But however, they still put it in, you know, in their report, in their comments. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. I think it's just that we are under pressure of time, but there are still issues like when you check your internal audit committee, you know, there are still questions around that. That's not many things. It's just that we are under the pressure of time. But on that note, let me just take this opportunity to thank the department for...
Before you bring, just for clarity, very short, in connection with the two employees, the word transfer is confusing. Mustn't we use here that the two employees are actually appointed into the correction?
Yeah.
Just for my understanding.
Madam Chair, yeah, I think the semantics within government, you say transfer, but yes, they've taken up new appointments. The post for advertise, no, it's just the one. The other one, as I indicated, Madam Chair, she was an SMS member. And in terms of the SMS requirement or the conditions of service, if I may say, you are allowed to redeploy SMS members. So this was a redeployment. It was actually a presidential redeployment.
Thank you, Honorable Titiglas. It's just that I know that Honorable members, our department, thank you for the opportunity for interaction, but I'm going to request that next time when we come, let the department come being prepared. The issue of the facilities is a challenge. We don't know which municipalities are those, and if we go down there, will we find what you have said in the report? On that note, I thank you, and we are excused from this meeting. Thanks.
Somebody must give me a little bit.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, honorable members. Our legal section. Let's go straight to our item agenda. That is deliberation and finalization of the Higher Education Laws Amendment Bill, B14B 2011. Honorable Divisors, we had the briefing last week. This is the section 75, so we are just going to deal with it now and finalize it. So I'm just, because my other members indicated that I've got other meetings as our commitments, can I just give straight to advocate to just to take us through?
Thank you, Chair. Indicated the last time, this bill is dealing with the amendment of two current pieces of legislation, the Higher Education Laws, the Higher Education Act and the National Student Financial Aid Schemes Act. Yes, with regard to the Higher Education Act, there's two issues that have been addressed. The first one is the issue of as contained in Clause 1 and also in Clause 2, which is basically the same principle, and that is the principle of the conflict of interest between your members of council and how to deal with it, the procedure and the consequences if there's a conflict of interest. And also the other aspect that's been dealt with in Clause 3 is to deal with the time frame that is given to the independent assessor to extend it from a 30 days to a 90 days in order to deal with the complexity of the work. Just the clauses that's following is dealing with the amendments to the NSFAS Act. This act, first of all, is providing, or this amendment bill is providing an amendment to the Act to give the minister an opportunity to intervene if there is maladministration or mismanagement by identifying the problem and give directives as to how to resolve it. It also provides for the very important aspect of the solution of the board and provides for the appointment of the administrator. Chair, the consequences of the appointment of the administrator, in other words, the assistance that's needed to the administrator and also the remuneration. Chair, these are all issues linked to accountability, dealing with the dysfunctionality of the governance structure, and to make sure that there is an intervention with a mechanism to intervene if such an intervention is required. Chair, the last issue, which is contained in as an appeal of Section 23 of the current Act, which is dealing with the obligation of an employer to deduct money from borrowers and to if the employer failed to do it, it is a criminal offence. That section is to be repealed by this amendment bill, and it is, as I indicated last week, it is as a result of constitutional principles, and there is no vacuum or lacuna created by this repeal, as the National Credit Act is still available and to deal with the recovery of money and the procedures in a fair manner, not only to the institution but also to the borrower. So, Chair, that is basically what the bill is all about. If there's any need, I know there's a time pressure. If there's any need to elaborate, please indicate and I'll do it with pleasure.
Thank you, Advocate. Honorable members, is there any things or issues that we still need clarity on? No. Honorable Baba?
Advocate Serpi, I'm happy.
honorable members, honorable advocates, honorable Faber.
Thank you, Chair. Just to satisfy the committee, I've walked the process in the portfolio committee with Advocate Bosses and the state law advisor on this bill. So the involvement has been thorough at the NA, and for that respect, I'm comfortable with the B version of the bill because we were involved in the national safety process. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable members, on that, let's agree, are we going to do it clause by clause, or are we going to take it like page, take the first page, adopt, go? Honourable de Villiers, can you give us guidance on that?
Chairperson, previously we went through the bill clause by clause and it comes from you, rather than we just go page by page. That was the situation. I don't know if there's any changes about that. Just for the legal side, must it go through clause by clause or page by page?
The decision of the
committee.
That decision of the committee. That is why I'm asking. That is why I was asking that whether should we go by page or should we go clause by clause?
Page by page.
No, I'm just also going to compare page by page.
Page by page.
Yes.
Thank you, Chief. I may also just once again satisfy the members that if usually if a bill has amendments, then the clause by clause would be the safer route. But if it's no amendments, then page by page should be a relatively cautious route, a relatively enough cautious route. Thank you, Chief.
I remember still feeling that we should go page instead of clause.
Relatively cautious.
There's no amendment. There's no amendment.
No, can you go page by page?
Page by page, yes.
Thank you. Honorable members. Page 1. And I was like, are you okay? Your page 2 will be the one that starts with general explanatory notes. You don't have a problem. Page 4. No problem. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Honourable members, I know that you are having a caucus. Can we? No, you are allowed to have a caucus. Maybe there's something that you have picked up. Are you fine, Honourable Father?
Madam G, if I may just ask our advocate. When I asked the question on that section 2.2 of the NISFAS, that it was only for, if you could still recall, when I read that piece out of the legislation, that it was only for students, and you recall that the second part, if our advocate is happy with that.
Is the question directed to me or to you?
Well, advocate, please, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair and Honourable Members. The issue that came up with, if I understand Honourable Faber correctly, was the funding issue and the money that was used. Is that what we're talking about? Yeah, but then with the appointment of the administrator, which was costed or paid for by the board, the NSF. Yeah. Now, we don't have a problem with that, because in terms of the principal legislation, there was a board that was paid, there was staff, and there was funds that didn't go to the purpose. But these were ancillary matters. For any institution, you would have a salary budget, for instance. And those are the costing of the administrator would come from that money, not the purpose of the loans and the funding of the students. So that's, just to clarify, we're fine with that.
No, then we have to, because I think that is our, the legal advisor explained it to me last time. That's something that we also
can
do. No. And
oh, thank you, Honourable Faber. Thank you from our legal side. Honourable Members, now because we have dealt with the bill, let me just read the report of the Select Committee on Education and Recreation. The report reads that the Select Committee on Education and Recreation, having considered the subject of Higher Education Laws Amendment Bill, B14B 2011, National Assembly Section 75, referred to it and classified by the Joint Taking Mechanism as a Section 75 bill, reports the bill. Accepted without amendments. Do we agree? That's the report.
Yes.
That's the date 26/10/2011. Honourable Members, on that note, let me thank you, everyone, for participating, and our legal section, the meeting is adjourned. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay.
Let me have something. I'm
hungry.
Make a
food.
Not fine.